All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the RTTL podcast. We have a special guest this week, Ricky, from X. Is it Archetype Theory? Is that your account name?
Yep, Archetype Theory. Running Operation Free Dalton at the moment.
Right, yeah. Important case. I don't think we have slotted to talk more about Dalton's case, although there are some updates I'm sure you could fill us in on. But mainly the reason he's here, he has developed a platform for enabling citizen journalism in a decentralized way. I read through it. I was very excited by it. And so I invited him on to share what that whole thing is and how he came up with it. But first, typically we begin talking about homesteading activities. So nothing new really going on. A lot of goat milking. We have one goat that's actually producing. Hopefully the rest of them will be bred soon, but still that's a lot more milk than we were getting, where we didn't have any. A new goat came in to the flock, or the herd rather, so that's exciting. My chickens stopped producing when I got them. I got like 40 chickens all at once, and now they're beginning to produce again, so thank goodness, because we had to actually buy eggs, which was embarrassing after spending a lot of money on a lot of chickens. But hopefully we'll be swimming in eggs in the near future. I got like a bunch of disposable cartons so that I could sell eggs to other members if they don't already have at once chicken eggs. But yeah, other than that, I don't even know what have I been up to. I was sick.
You were weed whacking,
I was weed
apparently.
whacking. Yeah, everything's growing up, so and I weed whacked and mowed the community area, so now I'm our community landscaper, my new job.
Yeah. I got some weed whacking in a couple of days ago, but it's hard to fit it in now with all the it finally started raining, so that's been fun. A little bit of weed whacking. Yeah, I have a couple of goats as well, and they're producing between 1 and 1.5 gallons per day. Between the two of them, so that's pretty good. It's a lot of milk, and so getting some eggs too. But this week I've also spent quite a bit of time working on the Return to the Land website. Nothing that you'll see on the public version of it, just like staff backend stuff that's very useful to moving forward with the future vision of our organization. So it's nice to get some time to go forward with that. And add a bunch of new features. We have some other people who are working on it as well, who are much better at edit than I am, but I do like to throw my hat in the ring occasionally and get some stuff done there. So, yeah.
All right, good stuff. Of course, we're still being sued by this Jewish lady, and we've been talking to lawyers this week. Obviously, we can't share who exactly those lawyers are, but we're basically looking at perhaps a team kind of dividing up the labor, litigation versus document prep and discovery, compliance and everything. So, anything to add on that?
Yeah, I mean we haven't, like you said, we haven't decided on anybody yet, but we're weighing our options. We're talking with a couple different lawyers, and we're waiting to hear back from a few others, because there's some firms that you want somebody else who knows them to get in touch with them first. So we're figuring all that out. Obviously, continuing to raise money. Since we started raising money for this specific case, we've raised around 50 grand for this specific case, which is great. Obviously, if it goes to trial, it's going to cost a lot more than 50 grand. If it doesn't go to trial, then which would be obviously be ideal, then it would probably cost a little bit less.
If we win.
If we win, if we lost, of course, it would be some insanely large amount of money, most
Yeah.
likely.
From what I saw, damages for this lady realistically couldn't be more than a couple grand. But then the proportion of damages to the plaintiff and a fine as a penalty is like 100 to 1. So if this lady is found to be entitled to $2,000 compensation, then we could potentially owe up to $200,000, or
Plus, we
potentially
would have to
more.
pay. She's also depends on how it goes, but she wants us to pay her legal fees as well. So
Right.
some like big law firm in DC is going to be like, send us a bill for $237,000 or something like that.
Right.
So we don't want that to happen. That's why we want to raise enough money now to hire a good lawyer and get on top of this and make it work. No matter what happens, we'll survive. Return to the Land is going to keep going. And we'll just keep growing and adapting. And we have our plan Bs and our plan Cs and things like that. So we hope nobody gets too blackpilled about this, because it's, you know, we have obviously we've had other legal situations in the past. It's not the first time something like this has happened. It's definitely the biggest thing so far, but we're well prepared and we're confident that we'll do our best to fight this and win. And fortunately, this is not a blue state.
Right.
But like I said, we'll see what happens. The best we can do, we can raise money. We're fighting for everybody's rights. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you go to returntotheland.org and click donate, our legal fund is right there. You can also scroll down if you want to donate gold or silver. There's instructions on how to mail us gold and silver that we can also use for the legal fund, as well as any other form of payment if, whatever reason, you don't want to use the Give, Send, Go. People also send fan mail to that address, and they also send hate mail. So if you don't like us, you can send an angry letter about how like evil we are. We've gotten those before, and sometimes like I would make a YouTube video reading them out loud. It's always a blast. So
we appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah,
love or hate,
you know? And there's another thing people have said, counter sue, you know, and I understand there's a lot of anger involved in something like this. Why is a Jewish person attacking a bunch of white families in Arkansas? This doesn't make any sense. We need to counter sue for obvious like harassment, abusive litigation, things like that. And I would say this, just because you have the ability to counter sue doesn't mean it's feasible. So we're going to ask whenever we end up selecting our lawyer and they go through, they figure everything out. We're going to ask for a professional opinion on the feasibility of things like counter suits and motions for sanctions and things like that. Judges don't tend to award things like that in civil rights lawsuits because they say that the long-term effect is it chills civil rights litigation, so that theoretically people who have been wronged will not want to bring suits because they'd be like, well, yeah, I mean, I guess in like a beast system mentality, it kind of makes sense. But the other hand, it makes it very easy to lawfare the heck out of people. So we're going to find out if it's feasible, and if it's feasible and if we raise enough money, then for sure, 100%. You know, we've been wanting to sue people and take legal action against people all along. The city manager, David Cameron of Springfield, Missouri, who came out like basically warning Return to the Land members from moving to Springfield, we would have loved to sue him for a conspiracy to deny us of our constitutional rights, like a city official actually warning American citizens to not move to that city. But we just didn't have the money to do it back then. So that's why we want to raise money, because we want to fight legally. But obviously, you know, you can only fight the system so much. That's why part of what we're doing is just groups of people voluntarily buying land together in a collective way all across the country. And, you know, this community happens to have been somewhat public, not in that we'd advertised, but simply that the news media went after us. We did allow it at first. And we want white people to see what we're doing and to be inspired and to realize, okay, we can certainly buy land collectively with other families that we get along with and that we share values with. And it can be very successful, and nobody's ever going to know about it, right? Because we're not going to invite Sky News there.
Right. Yeah, there are other communities right now that you don't know about, and you won't know unless you join Return to the Land, which, you know, if you're eligible, returntotheland.org is where you find the application. Now, regarding the fundraiser, of course, we do take super chats, and all super chats for this podcast always go to Legal Fund, because it is important. Our adversaries put millions and millions of dollars into lawfare, trying to set precedent, proposing new bills. They get active in the legal process, and we can't be passive. So if you believe in the cause, either get involved with your time. If you can't spend the time, if you can't get involved directly on the ground and you have some money, donate the money. And we do read off of the Give, Send, Go as if it was Super Chats. We'll be checking both the Rumble and the Give, Send, Go tonight. So
yeah, the Give, Send, Go has been doing very well. I think Dan Bilzerian shared it. I saw the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire and the Libertarian Party of Idaho actually posting about it in a way that's favorable to us.
That's great.
So that's nice to see that some libertarians are just, you know, being less cocky than they used to be. Some, though. Apparently they want to disaffiliate the New Hampshire Libertarian Party for saying mean words on Twitter.
That's nonsense.
So
I mean, it's libertarianism. They should all, just based on their ideology, support what we're doing.
Yeah, but apparently they're mad that the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire called Chud's attacker a, quote, feral Negro. So they're trying to disaffiliate that party from the National Libertarian Party, which is just shows that the whole part, the National Libertarian Party, is extremely gay.
Yeah, I feel like we can move in a more libertarian direction as a country, but not with the Libertarian Party. They've lost too much historically. They have a lot of problems with the candidates they've put up. They are a little bit woke. But mostly it's like they've been losers for so long, no one will ever believe in them. If Massey did a third party or an independent run, you know, who knows? But yeah, so that's our first update on the legal situation.
It is interesting. I just want to say that in parallel to what you're doing, you have Tyler Olivier exposing the Curious Joel sort of Jewish enclaves that, you know, use pressure tactics and go after people in sort of like these nebulous ways to keep people out, which is a lot worse than just blatantly having, you know, a law that says that this is like your zone, and how much they actually take over of the infrastructure. Like the fact that people trying to start something pure in the woods gets this kind of attention versus a total cult-like enclave that takes over every apparatus of a city is very interesting, that it's happening in juxtaposition with you guys.
Right, yeah. They would try to argue that what they do in Curious Joel is less discriminatory because, well, it's not technically an only Jewish city. Like, you could feasibly move there, but then they have all these tactics to pressure people out, to use the law, and just to make people feel unwelcome. And that's an actual municipality. You know, they have their own city government. They have probably federal funds. I didn't watch the piece on that, actually, but they probably have federal funds going to that city that's funding all of their hospitals, their police department, et cetera, which is overwhelmingly Jewish. So, yeah, it's a good point. In general,
I'm pretty sure it's virtually 100% Jewish, yeah. Their police department, their fire department, everything. I mean, imagine if we did that here, the press would go crazy.
Obviously. So. Yeah, I think as a rule, it's actually better to be explicit about these sorts of things and have contracts for these sorts of things. Like, if we're in a state of affairs where you can get away with it, if you're an Asian community, like an apartment building where their board only admits Asians, but it's kind of hush-hush, and that's normal, or the same thing for Hispanics, same thing for Black communities, then, like, being under the table opens things up for more abuse. Actually, you don't want to drive people under the table. Like, this is the libertarian argument, I guess, for legalizing various things that are seen as socially harmful. Well, if you make them illegal, they'll become even more dangerous, and like your dope will be laced with fentanyl, and like all these people OD or whatever. And it's kind of an awkward comparison because we're not dealing in dope or anything, but it is better, I think, to be explicit and have contracts making everyone feel safe and be safe and be legally accountable, and so that we know where we stand as well.
Yeah, that reminds me. I saw something, and I was going to put it on for the podcast this week, and I completely forgot. Last week, I got an email from The Intercept, which I believe is actually run by a gay Jewish man, but they were calling out, apparently there is an Israeli real estate company that holds like conventions in the United States or conferences or something. They hold events in the United States where they sell real estate of illegal settlements in Palestine. So basically Israelis will come in and bulldoze a Palestinian village or whatever, build their own houses, declare it Israeli, and then this company will sell those properties that have just been stolen basically to Jews in the United States. And if you go to one of these places, it's kind of hush hush, it's only Jews there, and they will ask about like what your religion is, to like kind of discourage and make sure that only Jewish people are buying those properties. And that's an interesting fair housing case, because I'm not sure if the fair housing law covers transactions involving international properties. That would be an interesting thing to look up and find out. But that's another case where you have these organizations operating pretty much out in the open. They're a little bit hush-hush about it, but nobody's ever investigated them for doing that. Glenn Greenwald, the gay Jewish man who runs The Intercept, I believe is actually trying to get the government to investigate them, which is nice. I mean,
to his credit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
so.
And he's doing that from like a leftist pro-Palestine perspective. He's not doing that from an like anti-Jewish perspective, like we would be wanting it to be done, but well, at least he's doing it.
We're not against anybody else. Listen, but yeah, they can get away with ethnically cleansing areas and then coming here and selling that real estate to only a particular ethnic group. But if we have an intention,
we bought this land from a logging company.
Yeah.
We're just like, all right, we're going to buy this piece of land together from the logging company. We bought it, we live on it, and now they're coming after us. So anyways, we have a few news stories tonight. The first one is a great replacement fears soar in Belgium. A major study by VRT reveals that a whopping 56% of Flemish people are afraid they are being slowly replaced by migrants. 56% of respondents in Belgium agreed with the statement, "I am afraid that Flemish people are slowly being replaced by migrants / people from abroad," on the survey. The study joins similar ones in France and Germany, which reveals serious fear across Europe about the ongoing great replacement. Currently, 72.9% of children and teens in Brussels are born of immigrants, and only 10.5% are indigenous Belgians. And that's in Brussels, but that's horrible. I would assume it's better in the rural areas, but still. A United Nations think tank has promoted 60 million migrants for Europe by 2050. The UN has long advocated for replacement migration as a solution to Europe's aging population. Europe's top leader, Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, is calling for more migration after already record numbers of immigrants arriving. They always tell you that the Great Replacement is a conspiracy theory, but then they're promoting it.
Very openly. Yeah, I mean, it's good to see that the majority of people in Belgium don't want it. In the article, it says that most older Belgians don't want a mosque near them. Ironically, though, some of the people who said they don't care about the mass migration and they're not concerned about being replaced still said they don't want a mosque nearby, which just shows the people who aren't worried about it just aren't thinking it through. They're like, in principle, well, what do I care if there are some like brown kids running around? They're going to bring their culture. They're going to assert their values. You don't share their values. And especially all the left wingers, like the Muslims that are coming in there, obviously they wouldn't be tolerant of homosexuality. They're not going to fly the pride flag and all this. So it's, for the most part, these people just can't think through the consequences of what this is actually going to look like. They're not fully
processing.
They might
also be scared. Sometimes even people are filling out what they see as anonymous surveys, they're still scared and they just don't answer correctly what they believe. I mean, if you did this survey 5 years ago, it probably would have been less than 50%, as well as in France and Germany. The fact that it's growing is positive, but I think for Europe, it might almost be too little too late. The damage might be getting to the point where it might get really, really, really bad before anything changes. Well, in the United States, we have more of a chance, more of a hope of changing things before it gets really, really bad.
I don't know. In another respect, we're already close to a plurality rather than a majority here. Demographically, there are more actual Europeans in Europe. Now, temperamentally and legally, I think we have a better shot because we're Americans and
yeah,
we're the best.
We're
American. And our laws are better.
And
but
we have more guns.
We do have a lot more guns.
Yeah.
But
like a lot.
I think
a lot.
Yeah. What's the proportion? Are there like two guns or more?
There's like a number of guns, but you probably know. It's like a number of guns.
Over 100.
Over
100 guns per citizen? There's no way.
It is surprisingly high, though.
I
could probably find it out in a second, though. But yeah, Americans have. And then the thing is, some of the people that have guns, they have hundreds of guns, just one person. So they bring the average up, but.
Right. What's the proportion on the land? How many guns? Let's not reveal
that
information.
We shouldn't talk about that. The ATF might be. Here we go. The United States has the highest civilian gun ownership rate in the world. There are approximately 1.5 guns per person. 500 million privately owned firearms in the United States. 120.5 guns for every 100 people. And that's for all people. So obviously the children are not going to own guns. So that might end up being more like 1.8 to 2 guns per adult. Or if you count it by males only, that's probably like 2 to 4 guns per male citizen or something like that.
Right.
So, I mean, it's pretty based.
But what they have going for them is that this all happened really, really quickly. Like Paris was a French city in the 2000s. You know, not that long ago, these places were still European countries. And the fact that it came so quickly, it's like they didn't really give the necessary time to boil the frog. I think you are seeing reactions. I think that's what you're seeing with Restore in Britain. And we'll see what actually comes of it. I mean, the thing is, we shouldn't just passively wait and see. We should get more involved. We do have RTTL chapters in Europe. We're in communication with other groups like the Free Sweden Project and like Les Braves in France, who are doing similar things. And the more people, white people, see us collectivizing, working together, and it paying off, the more people will join. And I think that's the key thing. You have to make sure that people see there are tangible benefits in living around your own kind. I just saw a stat, like 1/4 of all Swedish women will be raped because of the soaring rape rates because
That's of crazy. Migrants. Yeah, it is absurdly high. It makes you wonder why 100% of Swedes are not against what's happening. The brainwashing is insane. I don't understand how Europeans in Europe allow them to allow themselves to be so heavily brainwashed. Whereas us here in America, we're like, you know, we're Americans.
It's going to break down, and hopefully technologies like the one that Ricky will show us tonight can be used to spread the right information to the right people.
Hopefully. So our next story, it's kind of a white pill story here. a small victory. A North Carolina high school student wins a $20,000 settlement and public apology after being suspended for using the term illegal aliens in class. A school district in North Carolina has been ordered to admit their mistake, issue an apology, fork over $20,000 and more after they were sued for suspending a 16-year-old student who used the term illegal aliens. Students' council said school board sought to smear the teen's mother when she attempted to stand up for her son. Typical school board, that's why you need to get involved in local politics and just vote out everybody who's on the school board. This decision was made in a U.S. district court following a year-long legal battle after a 16-year-old student and his parents sued Davidson County Schools for their mischaracterization of racial bias and violation of the student's First Amendment rights. And so the case made it clear yet again, as if it needed to be made clear again, that a student's First Amendment rights do not disappear when they walk in the door of the classroom. I hope that the district also had to pay the legal fees, but unfortunately it's probably all coming out of the taxpayers' pockets. Really, the teacher and administrators and the school board should have personally had to pay because, I mean, what they did was straight up illegal. They had to have known. They just thought they could get away with it.
Right. Yeah, personal accountability for either administrators or politicians is incredibly important. One of the stories we'll look at later involves a judge letting an obvious criminal go. And unless these people are held accountable and have to pay consequences for damaging the commons and damaging like our society, then it's still going to happen. One of the things libertarians are right about, everything responds to incentives. So if you don't strongly disincentivize this behavior, and if you make the taxpayer pay for these things, for these mistakes, they're going to keep happening. Once again, I think things like Ricky's project will help us hold the right people accountable.
Yeah, and tying into Ricky's project, like one of the things we need, and this is probably very compatible with his idea, which we'll talk about in detail at the end, is a sort of decentralized yet also centralized way to actually have a database of all these public officials. Because like you see in the news every single week, some judge, some prosecutor, some school board, some principal, somebody just does something so obscenely traitorous and anti-white, and then it's out of the news and something else happens. Like, how do you keep track of all this? Wouldn't it be nice if anytime you're going to do business with somebody, anytime you're dealing with anybody, you could look them up in this database and find, is this person anti-white? Have they ever done anything anti-white? Or if you're dealing with a local election, if that person has ever done anything anti-white that's shown up in the news, right? That would be amazing. So that's probably something that feeds into that. But, you know, we'll talk about that, all that in more detail at the end, all the possibilities. the next story. German school children will be sent to concentration camps more often, right? And this is real. The Daily Mirror reports that Germany will spend $8.5 million to increase the number of trips to former Nazi concentration camps. The authorities want to expand school excursions to concentration camp memorials in order to preserve the memory of the Holocaust and fight anti-Semitism. And that's part of this, like, widespread, desperately spending way, way, way more money because they think, for some reason, apparently when you're of that ethnicity, you think that just throwing more shekels at the problem will make it go away. And it's gotten to the point where they just throw insane amount of shekels at the problem, and in their eyes, it keeps getting worse. Like spending $730 million instead of $200 million on Unit 8200 Hasbara online propaganda, it's not going to change anything.
Yeah, people are waking up to it too. And especially in public education, like you have to be subtle with propaganda. You can't teach Holocaust education every year for a month, which, like, growing up in Southern California, I feel like it was almost at that level. And you start to question, like, why do we spend so much time on this particular incident in world history? And why don't we learn about other genocides? And when information is out there about the Holodomor or the Armenian genocide or these other horrible things that have happened in the 20th century alone, like you start to wonder. So I think going way over the top like this ultimately has to backfire.
Yeah, it already had, even like 20 years ago when I was in high school, I remember having these conversations with other kids in my high school, some of them who grew up to be shitlibs, and I was certainly a shitlib back then, but I remember having that exact conversation, like, why are we learning about the Holocaust so much constantly every single year? And this was in an American high school 20 years ago. Imagine how bad it is now. So as a kid, you pick up on that. So now in Germany, if like every year you're going to a field trip to a concentration camp and you're seeing the brick chimney that was built after the camps closed, and you're seeing the wooden doors and all this other stuff, kids are smarter than people think, and kids pick up on this stuff, and it's only going to make it worse. Spending 8.5 million to like double the or triple the number of field trips to concentration camps, it's only going to make it worse. Those kids are going to pick up on that really easily, and they're only going to dislike the people that are being brainwashed into liking. they're all going to become Austrian painters. It's just a bad idea.
True.
So.
Can we check the super chats on Rumble? Again, all super chats go to the Legal Defense Fund. We are fighting a battle now. It's kind of an important one.
So, yeah, white Hebrew Israelite says for $3, thank you. Says, I dream of Germanic communities springing up all over the world, especially in my state. I am not pure Germanic, so I don't know if they would accept me, but I want to see them. Well, I hope that they will be multicultural enough to accept you. Some of us have small amounts of not, you know, they always make fun of me for my last name, like the comments under news articles or on Twitter. There will be some Jewish person complaining of my last name. They'll say I'm like, because I'm Eastern European, so. They don't know that I'm actually like 90% Nordic, so whatever. Anyways.
You're not full Magyar.
No, I wish I was. I hear that the Magyar are the master race, but that's the first thing they see my last name, and they're like, oh, you would never be accepted into one of those Nordicist. Well, maybe they would never accept me. I don't know, but I didn't start a Nordicist community, so.
I mean, the goal is we're going to have communities for all the various European ethnicities and the in-between area, like America. It's a new ethnicity sort of coming into being. Like we're pro-diversity. We want these communities to exist and ones with a bigger envelope. And it's not like we're completely against communities that are like more like the rest of society today continuing to exist. We're not trying to say that stuff can't exist out there. It's just that they want to shut down our attempts to have our own neighborhoods, to have our own communities. And that's the problem. So.
And we will start Albanian communities, and they will be like the Chicagos of the white communities, but they will
Exactly.
still have far lower crime rates than actual Chicago and actual St. Louis. And by the way, speaking of communities, it's not just about like, yeah, community in general just means bringing people together. So you could be talking about collective land ownership, but you can also talk about things like social clubs and things like credit unions, things like homeschool co-ops. Right, credit unions, there already are ethnically exclusive credit unions in the United States. We've talked about this previously. There's one that I've talked about it previously. I don't know if I'm going to keep naming it publicly because who knows, maybe the Jews will go after them too. But there's one that I know of that's centered around New York and New Jersey. And it's a credit union that, in order to join it, you have to be a member of a 501c8 fraternal benefits society that. Only accepts members of a specific European ethnicity, and you have to prove via genealogy or DNA test that you're a member of that. And that's 100% legal. And there are many organizations like that. There's Sons of Norway, Daughters of Norway. You have to be Norwegian to join that organization. That's a racially exclusive club for people who want to celebrate their Norwegian ancestry. And that's not even like people who join that's not even like a white supremacist or white nationalist kind of thing. They're literally just people who have been in Norwegian families that have been in the United States for however many generations, and they form these clubs at the very beginning to keep their traditions in line. And so, the more, you know, certain people go after us, the more they're going to be surprised to find out that what we've been doing is just something that everyone has already been doing. We just want to, whites who are black-pilled about the current state of society, we want them to realize that it's already been done, it's currently being done, we'll keep doing it, everybody will keep doing it. We just want to open people up to these solutions and get more people into them. Every single person of Norwegian descent in the United States, you know, should join Sons of Norway and Daughters of Norway and explode that organization to make people realize that, yeah, it can be done. So,
right.
We'll have the Albanian Federal Credit Union that you have to be Albanian to join. I shouldn't make fun of Albanians too much. I might meet one someday. anyways, anything else to add or should I move on?
Well, yeah, I would just stress, you know, these are things that can't be shut down. There are so many options for us that we've not really scratched the surface as far as what's possible to benefit each other, to lift each other up. You know, I have the business networking group that we've been growing. If you're interested, if you're an entrepreneur, you want to get involved, DM me on X at @arvoll_AARVOLL_. But it's really up to how much do we want to do. We can't sit around waiting for solutions to drop out of the sky into our laps. Our opposition, again, they put millions of dollars into their legal campaigns, their advocacy groups. This is something where we have to all get involved. It's total spectrum or full spectrum warfare against us. We have to go full spectrum. Everybody right now in the chat, like the video, share the video, or the stream rather. Let's get this movement going. Let's keep going and get more involved. There's no limit to how fast we can proceed either, other than how engaged we want to be with it. So yeah, don't blackpill, no blackpilling. We're going to take it back.
And we're about to, you know, RTTL as part of the movement, we're about to explode soon and not in a bad way because we're working on some very important things behind the scenes, one of which will allow our different regional designations around the country to organize much better, allow our regional leaders to communicate with everyone in that region of the country and schedule events much better. And so working on those kind of web solutions is going to make it much easier for the organization to just take off. So homeschool co-op related projects that make it very easy for anyone to start, click a button and spin up a homeschool co-op in their area where people can sign up for classes and that kind of thing. Just to give you kind of a taste. Of course, if you're an actual Return to the Land member, you'll hear a lot more in the upcoming announcements. Yep. So we have another super chat. Raven Resolve for $20 says, do you plan to have RTTLs for people who aren't white enough to qualify for Return to the Land? If so, what do you think that would look like? Well, we wouldn't have any reason to do that because we don't identify with those people.
We could have relationships with organizations like that, though, because we all have common cause in protecting our right to freely associate. Yeah. So if the Jewish community wants to reach out to us, like the mayor of Curious Joel, if you want to DM me on X, let's get a fund together to defend our rights. Like, I'm all for it. But yeah, it's not exactly our thing. It's not our responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, our main issue is like they're somehow allowed to do it, and we are some people think that we're not allowed to do it. We don't want it to be that way. So we, in theory, we have no problem. But the thing is, like, the sort of multicultural type of community doesn't work as well. There are studies on this that show that people contribute less to multicultural communities, and when they do contribute, they contribute less frequently. When they do contribute, they contribute less. There's less trust, and so you sort of have to have. That puts mixed people in a very interesting position because it's like, where do you identify with? So we were talking a long time ago. It's like, well, we should have a community for white men, or, you know, we should have like a group of people for white men who have Asian and Hispanic wives because they've sort of got themselves in a situation where they're not going to be accepted by like a white nationalist group, but then they don't want to move to China or Guatemala.
It would be unfortunately large community that could be founded.
Yeah. But, you know, they should band together. And if they banded together, they could have a pretty decent thing among themselves. We don't really care about that much. I mean, we don't really identify with them. But if they want to do their thing, you know.
Yeah. Well, so get on it. If there's anyone in the chat, again, like the stream. Let's all get involved, get this thing over the finish line and and keep going here. But
Carrie Embers for $13 says, thank you for $13, says, hail from the north. Oh, this is poetry. Hail from the north beats back my narrow hopes. Darkness sheds shadow. Shadows deck the gloom. Cold storms of rain drive down on stony slopes. All earth is warped in heaven's fateful loom.
I like it. I found out that he just posts the poetry that he likes the best, and it comes from a variety of sources.
Okay. So. You should read the next one because my throat's kind of killing me.
Okay. My transient friends are gone. Their souls have fled. My shield alone holds back the turning page. Hardship is here. My rosy world is dead. Bitter winter snows my hair with age. Wow. It's depressing.
Yeah. White Hebrew Israelite for $3. I had two Albanian friends growing up. They were brothers. They taught me how to steal Yu-Gi-Oh cards. Albanians can be dangerous. They're notorious for international mafias that traffic drugs. Yes, I remember when I lived in Ecuador, I was surprised to find out that a lot of the cocaine smuggling that happened there, Albanians were actually in charge of it.
So. In Ecuador?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Not all
Such
of it.
Such a small
but,
country.
Yeah. Well, actually, the vast majority of the world's cocaine actually goes through Ecuador. It's produced in Colombia and Peru, and then it's transported through Ecuador and shipped out in, like, banana shipments.
No, I mean, Albania is such a small country.
To Belgium and stuff.
To be involved in South American drug trafficking.
Yeah, I mean, they're European, but they have an average IQ of 82, so it makes sense. Hmm. Anyways. our last story here. Before we move on. So we may actually have to, as Eric pointed out before the show started, we may actually have to cancel our female judges segment because every week a female judge or district attorney makes some horrible decision or does something really stupid. But we are at some point probably going to be faced with a female judge. And no doubt the person in that like lawsuit or whatever is going to say that we've had a female judge segment on every single episode of our podcast. And that female judge is just going to rule against us no matter what, because female judges, as we see, are very emotional and make bad decisions. So we probably want to stop having a female judge segment, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But so this may be the last one. Israeli citizen, and this is, by the way, not a female judge. It's a female federal attorney, a prosecuting attorney, but still. Israeli citizen Ori Solomon was arrested for running an illegal biolab containing over 1,000 samples of deadly diseases such as malaria, dengue fever, I had that once, HIV, and tuberculosis in Las Vegas, Nevada. The Jewish female acting federal attorney of Nevada, Sigal Chata, has successfully pushed for all the charges against him to be dismissed. Weird. Sigal was also behind the escape of the Jewish child rapist, Tom Alexandrovich, who fled to Israel after charges were mysteriously dropped. And Chata declined to prosecute. I mean, that's just a weird coincidence. She just drops charges against these Jewish criminals, and then they escape to Israel.
Right. This Jewish attorney deciding to drop charges. I wonder what was going on with that lab exactly. You know, was this like his own independent operation? I didn't get a chance to look into
it. It was probably a Mossad operation, and he probably just was never forced to actually tell them that it was Mossad because he was probably treated. You know, they probably got the call, oh, he's foreign intelligence, you can't touch him, this is over your head. Just like that Florida prosecuting, that Florida district attorney in like 2009 or whatever, they first tried to prosecute Epstein. He was basically, and you know, he said that I was told to drop this, it's over my pay grade, that he's foreign intelligence. So that probably happened. And I don't even think Ori Solomon left the U.S. I think he's still in the U.S. and he's just free now. The pedophile guy had to leave.
Right. Well, the same thing happens with, like, you know, agents in deep cover. When they get investigated by a local person, they'll get the call and say, oh, that's one of our guys. You know, don't touch him. And Mossad is, like, above the CIA de facto. So the same thing happens. You probably saw this, Ricky. Do you have anything to add to the story?
You know, I mean, it's just that it's so blatant how obvious they don't even try to hide it anymore. They have such a sense of security about consequences that they don't even like spin anything. Like the, it's like, there's so much little effort into hiding this. And it's like, so strange.
Mask off.
You know, it really is mask off. You know, it's, this would be like a career ender a long time ago, or you would at least have to answer to it. There would be media beating down this judge's door to get questions. But like nowadays, everything is so controlled and so hyper coordinated at a certain level. No one touches it except, you know, people online that aren't a part of any larger corporate entity.
And the people, the Goyim, are very enslaved and very like overweight and unhealthy and glued to their streams and their smartphones and their energy drinks. And it's just, everyone's so drugged up and entertained that you just have like a handful of autists on the internet that are raising a fuss about this. And a lot of people just don't care. Or they're like, yeah, this sucks and it happens, but what am I going to do about it? So,
right.
You know, people need to kind of up their game, because if we gotten to the point where Jewish public officials can do these like blatantly treasonous things and not even care, just completely get away with it, not even try to hide it, just, and the media just doesn't even touch it, that's a really bad sign. That's a sign that we've had our guard down for way, 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 way too long.
Right.
And people who know that this is happening, you have to start figuring out what you can do about it in your life, right. Whether that's joining a pro-white organization, whether that's donating to a cause, whether that's getting involved in local politics and like getting your town to vote out the entire school board, whatever it ends up being. Like Eric used to, or somebody used to talk about, maybe it was Eric, like if you have like 10 million white people or something like that, maybe like 1% of them will donate to a pro-white cause, 1% of that 1% will actually join a pro-white organization, and 1% of that 1% will actually do something or become leadership in that organization. So, but all those numbers need to go way up if we ever want to accomplish anything. And if we brought these numbers up just a little tiny bit, we would have massive change across the whole country.
Exactly. If the engagement percentage doubled, well then what is the end result of that many more people being engaged? So remember, internet autists, it's up to you. So we all have to get engaged. It's not optional. You know, it's not like, well, am I suited to this? It doesn't matter. The people in power, people abusing our system, are inept, incompetent. They're doing this all out in the public. It doesn't take a genius. It doesn't take like the best of us even to make a difference now. It just takes anyone who's, it is idiocracy territory. Like the 100 IQ guy now can just get into the system and say like, hey, that's treason. That's all it takes. You can do it. You personally can get involved. And we're going to talk right now about tools where more of us can get involved, exposing these things, holding people accountable. Before we move to the story, though,
Actually, before you go on with that, I just thought of something that I don't want to forget. I saw a video today of PNW Gorilla, who we had on a couple weeks ago on the podcast, at a county meeting in his state, and apparently they were trying to pass some rule of like giving a whole lot of, basically getting rid of cash bail for illegal immigrants. And he's not a politician. He's just some guy who has a military surplus warehouse. He got up and just started swearing at them and just like, what the hell is this? This is ridiculous. And they were so offended, but it's like, if more people went to town meetings, and if your town is doing stupid stuff like that, and your county is doing stupid stuff like that, just, even if you're not an eloquent person, just show up and be angry. Yep. And yeah, maybe if every 10 people that show up, one person will actually go up there and give a nice, intelligent speech. Yeah, but whatever. It doesn't matter. At this point, we just have to show that we're angry.
Right. Or like in Chud's case, one of these, I forget whether it was a district attorney or what it was, but he characterized it like Chud brought this on himself by abusing his free speech privileges. I think we talked about that last week. It's like, you have that guy's number. Actually, all these public servants, you can call their office. You can make your voice heard.
You can send emails. You can send letters. Yep. Everyone needs to abuse the free speech privilege at this point.
Absolutely. But we need technical solutions to facilitate this and organize this, because people have been repeating these mantras for decades. You know, get more involved, get in local politics. What we need are systems for organizing activism effectively, journalism effectively. Again, why I was so excited to hear about Ricky's proposal. But before we move on to hear about it, he's been very involved advocating for Chud's side in this case and how we can all somehow chip in. I think the precedent in that case is also very important. So tomorrow, I think there are two hearings, or you're more tuned into this than I am. So please give us the CHUD update.
Yeah, tomorrow is going to be a source hearing that's really about the previous misdemeanor bond that he was out on. Essentially, that story is a local person doxed his number. He was getting all these harassment calls. So he forwarded the harassment calls hitting his phone to the person who doxed him, doxed his number's phone. That person made a police report. That's his misdemeanor. It's insane. And it's that's what he violated. So tomorrow they're going to figure out how to deal with that. And then they're going to have a source hearing for the funds to cover the bond amount from the shooting, which is like a million dollar bond. So they're trying to get all that together, hopefully tomorrow. He could be out on bond tomorrow, but you know, this seems like a motivated court to have a specific outcome. So we'll see.
If he does come out and he doesn't want to be harassed, we might know a place where he could come and have safe haven. So
absolutely. No, that's good. That's why you exist. You know what I mean? That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. All right. So without further ado, we'd like to hear about this protocol that you've worked up. Let Scott know when to pull up your document that you've prepared. But yeah, go ahead and take it away and let us know what you've been working on.
Sure. So like you said, you got to have interface tools. And, you know, we have, you know, I grew up with all of these, you know, analyzing the political philosophy. It should be this way, it should be that way. But we've never really had good interface tools to deal with the government. And, you know, that's by design, right? So essentially what this protocol is what the government should already have baked into its structure to keep itself from being corrupted. And it's like an audit system, right? But the problem is the government obviously does not update technology or the interface for the citizens to control the levers of government to hold politicians accountable. And, you know, there's a whole legal apparatus of things you have to do, file a FOIA, a FARA, you know, to dig into the corruption networks to see where money's going, what's happening. And we've lost any sort of leverage over our government as citizens. We have zero. And what they've done is they've tricked us into these political seasonal cycles of drama to give us the feeling of going to war, to give us the feeling of being engaged, but it's all that energy is actually being diffused into political drama that actually doesn't go anywhere. Because even if you do get a good politician into power, they don't have any levers to actually change anything. So this is a protocol to change the war game. They want us to play in their fantasy game and not engage civics directly by making it having a big barrier between it and keeping us distracted.
So it's called the daylight protocol, I assume, because this is bringing everything into daylight, right?
Essentially, yeah. It's there. You know, there's some metaphysical principles underlying it that I think are very important that make it unique. But I'll just kind of explain what it is.
First of all, when you say protocol, like, what do you mean by protocol here?
So essentially it is a set of rules, so to speak, to interface with the civic structure in order to find the pressure points and leverage to essentially find who the specific individuals are who are at the hub of corruption. So it could be you know, anything, right? So you know, especially with politics, you have so many like instruments at your disposal to get the information you need to discover corruption. This is a protocol to sort of create a shortcut to that, to make the levers accessible to people and to pay people to actually use them. Because, and it sort of follows, this could be applied at many scales, but that's sort of the protocol. It's a way to just refine the civic engagement for lawfare. It's basically a decentralized lawfare system that pays people to do all the necessary steps that will direct consequences towards a goal, to hold politicians accountable, essentially.
So essentially, we all know that we have to expose corruption, but the actual process to get the information is very tedious and people don't want to engage with it. So you do have to incentivize people as well as giving them the tools to facilitate them actually going through with it. So that's what this protocol affords. It incentivizes this behavior, like getting FOIA requests put through, and it also tells people how to do it, essentially.
Yeah, and so if you want to pull up the flowchart I sent you, we can kind of look. Let me know when you have it on.
It's up.
I can't.
Yeah,
okay.
It's up now.
Okay, so essentially, imagine you have an interface that could look like this, right? You have a problem. You know, your problem, right? Or, you know, with you have a lady found a lawsuit, possibly a corrupt judge. And we want to discover this network. We want to figure out what's going on. And so
can you screen share that for us that only we will see so that we can see where you want us to show? So we're zooming in on the right stuff for you. There's a lot of information in that PDF.
It's a big flowchart.
Yeah. Is that publicly available?
Is it showing? So I did post it on X.
Yeah. Okay, great. So people can find it on your X.
Yeah. Are you able to see it at the moment?
Yeah.
But okay. If we screen share his, I'm pretty sure it's low res.
It's going to be low res. So screen share our version, Scott, and then just track where he is showing.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So essentially, it's a blockchain. It takes advantage of all of this technology we have that's getting wasted in gambling casinos and, you know, who knows, and it creates a structure that should exist already in government, but it allows us to stitch it on government from the outside in a decentralized way. And what the blockchain allows is for one, you know, information you can't erase, smart contracts, and it allows you to have, so you have the post a problem, right? Let's say you you want to start funding the operation, the protocol to solve your problem, right? And you might go, okay, we have to get so many documents from the government, file FOIA requests, and start digging and start doing things that you sort of don't need a law degree to do, but you need a little bit of know-how, a little patience. So you can start there. This can also be funded from the top down. If you're a politician with a bunch of money and you want to go to war with a candidate you know is corrupt, instead of funneling, you know, $2 million into advertisements, you could be funding this, and this could be the content for your campaign. We'll talk about that in a minute, but that's what I designed this for originally, but it applies, you know, broad scale anytime.
Well, you can see immediately how that would be really useful. Like, rather than buying TV ads that are kind of untargeted, or, I mean, now they're more sophisticated. You can actually pay to have text messages sent out to certain demographics, et cetera. But with this, like, a little bit of money in principle should get you a lot of key information that's going to be valuable for, you know, getting your guy elected and the other guy.
Could this be used for organizing like mass email campaigns or mass phone call campaigns? For example, say some school board does something horrifically treasonous or anti-white. Could this platform be used to be like, all right, we want to get 500,000 people to send them emails and phone calls and let them know that what they're doing is downright criminal? To give them that kind of pressure.
You're muted, Ricky.
Yeah, so this is essentially for any ethical, and the reason why I say ethical is because we, you know, that's the metaphysical dynamic is we don't want to hide, you know, we don't want to, if we have to rely on the tricks they use, we're never going to have to, we're never going to be that insidious or be that, you know, evil to counteract them, right? So you have to like almost go metaphysically opposite and keep everything above board and transparent. And when you design your attack that way, they can't come at you in little seedy ways, you know, blackmail, et cetera. The being open is the attack. We'll get into that more, but essentially, like you said, anytime you're shining light on a problem, this is designed to create the incentive structure to pay people to donate to a problem that pays people to solve it. And
Used for any type of civic activity, to incentivize any type of ethical civic activity, basically. And that's what we're lacking right now is ethical civic activity from every single white person in the country that sees what direction the country is going.
Emails, petitions, anything.
Yeah. So this is an interesting distinction. The Daylight Protocol I built as a counter social engineering protocol that does exactly what you just said. It helps people map the topology of it, of the problem. A lot of people don't, the abstract problems, they don't think about the direct people, the connections, and how to apply pressure points to them. The Daylight Protocol is designed to be a kind of counter social engineering network to discover the most shortest ethical path to dealing with people in a civic way. Blade is more of the direct government apparatus, but there is that social engineering part where it's more diffuse and cultural, that it may not directly engage completely the Blade government civic, but it does apply to dealing with more ephemeral cultural issues that you need to solve.
Hey, sorry. So when you say Blade, what is that compared to the Daylight Protocol?
So here, I'll show you.
Does Blade stand for something?
Yeah, let me see if I can send it to you real quick. Sorry about that, one moment.
That's all right. Yeah, I mean, this is like the reason that I appreciate what Massey did in getting the Epstein files, a lot of them released, and supposedly legally they'll have to release the rest of them. He's even going to exploit another kind of loophole to read off the names, the redacted names from the files. He found procedural ways of holding people accountable. And that's exactly what this is. And it's what we lack. It's like everyone can think of political ideas. Everyone can think about what they'd like government to look like, the country to look like, but actually identifying, like he said, putting where does the pressure go? What specifically, what information do we have to get? And how do you get that information? And then what do you do with it? Where are you sending that information? And there's just a lack of direction, you know, like the most sophisticated people in our circles tend to advocate, okay, attend your local Republican Party. Like that's the level of our thinking. You got to get involved, go to town meetings. That's the level of my thinking, frankly. I'm not like an expert in political campaigns, but I have been exposed to other groups that are tapping into these tools, specifically people associated with Patriot Front. They're pretty savvy with how you implement a ground game, and you know what neighborhoods to go into, and you know like the voting history and everything, so you don't waste time. And that's a whole other set, but this is much more general. This is like, it's not just how do you campaign, it's how do you expose the system, get all the necessary information out of it, and then distribute it to all the right people. So but Blade,
so Blade, it's Bounty Ledger, Bounty Ledger for Accountability and Distributed Enforcement. And that's specifically the ways of dealing with an the government structure. So the Daylight Protocol can be more cultural mapping. Like, let's say you want to, I came up with this because I thought banning circumcision would be a good way of dealing with the cultural issues we have. And I thought this could be a way to find the path to doing that. So you can take these cultural issues, map them out, use whistleblower, and basically use the turn people into a network hive mind of giving you information from all places, within hospitals, within companies, people who have ethical objections, who want to do something, but don't have a way of saying what they know that could help somebody solving it. So when you have the Daylight Protocol and you have people starting to create a topology of a problem that could help a solution. So let's say your solution is, having the laws just for white people to be able to legally own land that belongs to them and their rules. Daylight Protocol is going to map all of the social engineering from different parties, and take this collective feed to start creating a map of who do we go for to solve it specifically. And then Blade is the actual attack vector through lawfare. That's sort of how it maps. They can be without each other. You don't need one or the other. But Daylight Protocol will map more into that. And because the one thing I wanted to stress was, people don't want to vote anymore. It's like, why? Like, it's not exciting. We're kind of, our memory is too good. People want to actually do something. They want to go to, there's a special energy that starts to overtake people every election cycle. And these are natural cycles people go through. Like, it's a kind of like a martial energy of wanting to fix the problem, go for corruption, make things better. And they've made an art into diffusing that energy into going nowhere. And the Blade Protocol can help capture that special energy around election time, where you can actually start getting, Dan Bilzerian, right? He's running in District 6. He has a whole host of problems there of well-known corruption. Imagine that he starts getting people in District 6 paid to start mapping. So they're learning. So each individual is learning how this works. They're getting better at it. They're making money. So they have, they do $500 a day in bounties of filing this paperwork against this guy, this person. And they're being taught how to do it by some parts of the technology called a mirror AI. Just think of it as an AI integrated to help facilitate the learning of the process, to also help map the terrain, just something running in the background. So it's not essential, but it's using that technology, the pattern recognition technology, and also to quickly educate people in this process. So essentially, imagine Dan Bilzerian puts $2 million into this protocol, $2 million of bounties. Imagine how he could clean the floor of corruption, expose it all. And if you go to the chart, you'll see it. There's a little
difference between taxi companies and Uber, effectively, by decentralizing and giving people the tools to do this job, it's going to be so much more efficient. I feel like this, I don't want to overhype it because I just read one paper on it, but I feel like this is going to be the way that campaigns are won in the future.
It has to be because, I've never voted in my life, and why? I'm at some point you kind of get that it's, it's nothing's going to come of it. You should be participating, but they've made it toothless. They've made the voters, citizens of our country, toothless. There's nothing we can do unless we have a way to collectivize our effort to go after these people. So you know, if you kind of look at the bottom, it says the, you know, so you have your middle green section, file the FOIAs, pull the records, you know, you get all the information. I call this overwhelming truth. Overwhelming truth is just an idea that you have to pull out as much truth as possible that you present that the majority of people can argue with it. And that's where real power comes from. It like clicks and you can't counter that. Overwhelming truth. You know, they want everything to be little nuggets of truth, half-baked conspiracy, plausible deniability. And you really have to go nuts with the overwhelming truth. And that's sort of what this does, is you want to pull out as much data as possible. And then as the cases get filed, the findings get published. So you not only do you have people being paid to do all this information, you're going to have journalists covering the information. You're going to have people affected by the problem funding the bounties and spreading the info, like, hey, help us expose this corrupt mayor who wasted all these funds. Let's get pull up his LLCs. Let's deep dive. Mm-hmm. And then eventually it's going to go before the court. This is the litmus test. Is the judge going to do something about it? Or is he going to try and ignore it? Is the prosecutor going to do something about it? Or is he going to ignore it? Then you go after them with Blade. And if you have a cycle or two of this, you don't even join politics unless you, because you know you're going to be at the, you're going to have this on you at some point of people incentivized to come after you. You have to be a clean slate. And essentially we have a problem of everyone's corrupt. Everyone's fucking got shit on them. And we have to like get rid of all of them. We have to get rid of every single politician in office right now. Every single one has to go. No more connections, no more, you know, you're friends with this bank, that like that era, we have to go grassroots up as hard as we can. We cannot let them keep their power structures in play anymore.
Right. But to do that, you can, it's not as simple as let's throw them all out and replace them. You have to really attack at the local level where they're being elected and fine-grained information that will compel voters to do what's necessary. And people, you know, like people are ideological on both sides, but if they see facts about that person, that's why they use smear tactics in campaigns already regularly. This sounds like it could also be used in general as a kind of crowdsourced private investigation tool, even outside of politics.
Yeah, it's the some of the applications I first was like building this on are very different. And, you know, it was how do I bring this to public awareness? You know, I'm just thinking through of like, how do I actually get this in front of people's faces? And election cycles are like the that's where people are going to like, oh, this maps. But like you said, this can go anywhere. And once you map out a state, like let's say you do a pilot run in a Congress and then you get a whole state. Well, the AI, you're training an AI with this and the AI is training people. So what happens is everything you learn from one state can move very quickly to another state. We're talking fast. So before they can figure out what's happening, you can have these strategies spreading throughout every state. So someone goes, oh, if you do this and this and this, you know, you can topple a corrupt local government very quickly. And learning all their little secrets of hiding money, shell games, and actually being able to pay lawyers to go after them. Because what this does is it makes lawyers free to get paid by people to go nuts on people and get paid good for it. And so you're going to have different tiers of professionals being able to interface with this at various levels of sophistication, lawyers actually filing the stuff, you know, the charges. And then it also just weeds out all the bad actors. It's the daylight. You see if you're a good person, you have no problem with this. If you're a bad person, it's going to be obvious when this knocks at your door, whether it scares you or not. And it's just going to start exposing mask off. Everyone's going to glow. And there's no other way short of violence to do anything anymore. And they want us to feel like we only have violence, because we're not ever going to have a revolution on violence that probably wins. And if the sooner we are baited into violence, the sooner they can bam, really go, they have the justification to start breaking the civic structure that's in place right now. So this is like time sensitive, because every year they're dismantling the levers we currently have to solve the problem of them.
We should do some super chats.
Oh yeah. Yes. No, totally. Yeah, the lawyers also being able to take advantage of these bounties, I think, is an interesting model as well. Again, to compare it to another industry, in the trucking world, there are people who work for companies or who have longstanding contracts with companies as owner operators. And then there are people who are just looking at the boards. You know, you pay to have access to these boards of possible jobs, and then you pick the one that's convenient for you. And that's a lot less overall investment. So rather than having a client relationship with one person and everything that entails, being able to just do the legal work necessary for a much larger project, and especially one that can be political in nature, and like the lawyer himself can join a cause that he believes in and get fairly compensated. Because lawyers obviously, notoriously, have to compromise their own values because, well, their responsibility is to their client, right? And so if the guy's guilty and they know that, they have to lie. Whereas in this case, the whole, like, their job is to expose what is true, is to do the necessary work to get information out to the public. So we have a lot of lawyers in the movement too. And one of the problems is there aren't a lot of jobs for them other than working for the system in some capacity. So this, it would put a lot of people in a position where they could stop compromising and start working according to their values. So I really like it. But we should look at super chats real quick before we move on.
We got a white Hebrew Israelite for $3. He says, well, he has a question, actually. I have been thinking, why has no radical feminist terror group ever made a bioweapon that specifically targets the male population? Is radical feminism dead? I have no answer to that.
Do they actually want to kill all men? They realize that there would be no women, too, in the next generation.
I think supposedly there's some scientific solution to that. But another one from White Hebrew Israelite for $3. What do you think of direct democracy, where instead of voting for representatives, you vote directly on the laws and policies you want?
I think it's
very easy to manipulate people.
No. Yeah. You can't trust people like that.
A monarchy would be better than direct democracy.
So one thing that actually this plugs into is the Blade Protocol. What it does is it makes politicians leaders again, like leaders of something, leaders of an army, because, you know, an army that has no martial capacity is not an army, and you can't be a leader of something like that. So politicians should be leaders to engage their constituents into solving problems, making things better, right? So what Blade does is it turns these, you know, facile politicians that, you know, largely are just there to either sell out, go through the motions, and it gives their constituents teeth to actually do things. So there's a, you know, a structure to having a leader helping point people in the directions and being having, you know, the spirit and energy to invoke lots of people to be active and energized. So it's important to have, I think, that sort of
you need hierarchy.
That hierarchy, right?
Yeah, and decentralization doesn't mean an egalitarian framework. To have an effective decentralized network, you need like master nodes and slave nodes in circuitry terms, in cybernetic terms, and the same goes for social networks. Just because it's decentralized doesn't mean it's like direct democracy, egalitarian. But
speaking of leaders, we have another super chat from the same guy for $3. What do you think of monarchy and aristocracy? Well, I think it can be based.
Yeah, I mean, the danger obviously with monarchy is you get a bad king and then he has absolute power. Aristocracy is kind of by definition good because what it literally means is rule by the best. And of course, you want rule by the best. So if you have one guy who's just absolutely the smartest of all, probably, yeah, make that guy king, sure. Or if you have like a cadre of educated, virtuous people, that would be the aristocracy you want to go. Like, no matter what, you're shooting for aristocracy by definition. Monarchy in certain circumstances is the same as aristocracy in other circumstances is not. Oh, this one's kind of controversial,
Yeah,
I
we got another
guess,
one here.
with our guest.
Apparently the chat was blowing up for a little while.
No, it's cool.
White Hebrew Israelite for $3 says, I don't mean to be a bother, but some people in the chat are accusing your guest of being Jewish. They're also accusing him of being gay. Says I
Oh,
was
I'm
wonder
sorry, man.
says I was wondering if you could ask him what his full ancestry is to clear things up.
Do you have your
Sure.
23andMe handy?
I have my sister's somewhere, but I'll
Oh,
post it on my X
really?
account. But okay, I could just tell you. So listen, you know the Hatfield and McCoys? I am direct from Devilance Hatfield, his sister, my dad's side, from them. Also that he comes right from West Virginia, Tug River, Hatfield and McCoy, all over on my dad's side. My mom's side, my grandpa's English, straight from, parents straight from England. So it's mostly Scottish, English, and Germanic. That's
Okay.
pretty much it. No, no Jewish, no Ashkenazi.
All right.
Sorry.
But they were also
Not
calling you,
gay.
you're not,
not
okay,
gay.
so you're neither
Not gay.
Jewish nor gay. Because
No, I have boys and a wife, yep.
so you successfully procreated. See, I caused a stir in the chat because some guy was calling you Jewish and gay, and I said in the chat, please ban that guy. And one of the moderators said, don't do it, he's a Rumble subscriber. And the other moderator just immediately obeyed my command and banned him. So thank you. Apparently, maybe I was right in issuing that command. Maybe that guy subscribed just to be able to troll the crap out of the channel. I don't know. But anyways, oh,
Could be.
yeah.
Yeah, when the aristocracy demands one thing, but then the subscribers demand another, that's when I'm like, oh,
It's a good
it's tough.
analogy for, yeah, that's what just happened.
I have a lot of Groyper accounts that still follow me from, a few weeks ago, and so I'm sure it's probably from that, most likely.
Yeah, there's been at like
No.
least 5 or 6 people, if not more, that are just like repeating over and over again that you're gay and Jewish. And our
Just
mods have mostly been banning them, but apparently the one that I wanted to ban was a subscriber. I think we should still have banned him, but how much money do we get from subscribers?
I'm not even sure. I have
So
no idea.
it's probably not worth it.
I would presume, but just this is a case where decentralized activity is so potent. If we took all the energy of griefing and raiding streams and took those same people and applied them to getting necessary information about corruption in government, we'd be in a much better place.
Sounds
So,
like Nick Fuentes is directing all that energy in a really into really stupid, pointless directions, like raiding people's channels. Well, why not rage the why not like send 1 million emails to the prosecutor's office that's going after Chud,
yeah,
So
Robert Nash should get a million emails.
yeah.
All
But
right.
instead they're all in our chat room calling this guy gay and Jewish.
Yeah.
So
There's it So the blade, the blade protocol with the daylight protocol. There's one other one I have coming out, called the it's like a civic conduit, and this is going to be an algorithm free, of politician direct to voter interface. Everything's an interface and an energy problem, like everything, right? So if you just start from certain principles, they're metaphysical principles, but they're
It's all just thermodynamics at the end of
It
the
is all
day.
ther it's all thermodynamic. I honestly truly believe that in a sense that it's all about how do you get the psychic energy to a physical act, right? And evil worships the physical act. One thing that's interesting is it's like we were the the white race is a we ask why, right? We've done how, and then we went to why. Some people are stuck in the how, and evil gets stuck into this there's one thing I want to like bring up to everybody. I think it's interesting. That's really like helped my thinking about things. Evil worships the shortcut. Evil always finds a way of taking a shortcut to get something or achieve something without taking the normal process, either murder, lying, deceit. You know, those are all shortcuts to do something without honesty. So like imagine you had a shape, like a circle, right? And you can take a shortcut by going through the shape, or you can obey the topology of the shape. And evil cuts through things. And it leaves a mess. There's an energy mess that evil, it creates knots. It creates all of these problems. I mean, you can feel it internally when you do something bad. You're creating, waste. It's, you know, there's not a cycle. So goodness is the opposite of that. And you can't fight evil with anything evil. I think people have to get this through their head. You cannot fight a Machiavellian system with their same principles, because you never actually fix anything long term. You're just sort of replacing people who have just different agendas, so to speak, but you're not changing the type of person.
They use lies. We have truth. More lies aren't going to correct the problem of lies in government.
And that's that metaphysic is baked into all of this. It's super important because you can't make it without that. I believe that being good and listening to your conscience, like truly like having a relationship with your conscience, is how you connect across time and space to other people that are doing good things too. And that's sort of like a lot of people think that evil is more powerful because they take the shortcut. They have no limits to what they'll do. But on the opposite, being good is what transcends you across time and space to like-minded people, to have synchronicities, to causally align towards something without you even knowing it. And eventually you converge. And I think that's like the properties of good versus evil is, good has that, but you have to listen to your conscience. You do have to be a good person, and that opens you up to be a conduit to the larger clash between control and freedom.
Yeah, there's a very interesting clash going on right now because we're having this very like high level abstract spiritual conversation, and meanwhile in the Rumble chat it's just a bunch of like 19-year-old groypers freaking out about Jews and porn and stuff. So but we do have a pseudo super chat on the Give, Send, Go that I figured I'd read.
Sure.
So anonymous giver for $10 right after the podcast started said, when despite everything the building rises over the years, when you do not stop along the way, when faced with heavier and heavier stones to be placed, you continue. Only then does the ideal begin to live. Leon DeGrill. And then we have, I believe, another super chat on the actual Rumble. Savage Monday for $2. Oh, thank you. Says, what are your thoughts on Jason Cohen and Go Free?
So I like him. We did an interview. I like his terminology. I think it is very considered. I think there's a lot to be said for it. I don't know why, but he freaked out against me, apparently. I never saw the stream where he did it, but apparently there was a time where I used one of his terms, but then I didn't immediately cite him. And like I thought the whole deal was he wants this vocabulary out there, but he took it very personally. And I think it's because he's like upset that people haven't promoted him more. I think he's gotten a lot of interpersonal issues. I think he is a very good, solid thinker. I think I like his messaging, but like at a personal level, he could probably use, I don't know, some more diplomatic training or something. I like him. I'd be happy to talk to him again. Not sure why he freaked out on me. But yeah. So yeah, Ricky, I like what you're saying. I'd like to invite you onto my YouTube to discuss more of the philosophical and metaphysical aspects. For now, if there's anything else, I guess let's get to the pragmatic side of this. Like, what does the rollout of this protocol or these protocols actually look like? How far away is that in the future? How could people get involved, and what do you need? What support do you need to actually launch it?
So it, you can have an, like an analog run with this, right? So, let's, I'm just using Dan as an example in District 6, because like, you know, if that would be cool if it happened, right? But if you had an analog version of that, you would just have money set aside and you would just do this by hand. You know what I mean? You would just sort of do this by hand, see what it looks like, getting all these things, you know, pump it out and sort of use that to popularize this idea and attract funding. It does pay for itself. So one thing that's cool about this is, you know, as the money moves through the protocol, you can help finance the infrastructure for it. So if you have, you know, if this is, ideally, this should be completely decentralized. What's cool is it can fork, right? So people can fork the data and move it and use it. You know, that's one cool thing about the blockchain is, you know, you can ferry this off into another country, duplicate it, whatever. But, you know, there's going to be probably some, you know, hardware needed, you know, decentralized nodes for the blockchain, AI, you know, there is like a, there is some infrastructure obviously needed, and people facilitating it. You know, what's cool about it is that it's very neutral, right? So it's ideologically neutral. It's really about corruption, legal corruption with the politicians. So anyone can kind of use it. And I think it will actually help bring people together at our level once we realize that we have these tools to go after the real corrupt people and actually see what, how corrupt these people are and actually have a way to do something about it. It will, I think, kind of like level us as individuals, as the pleb class, whatever, to not infight so much, because we won't be as affected by the top-down social engineering as much, because like we don't really know what things are like without 24/7 social engineering. That's just the reality. It's like how much of our day, if it's not, you know, if we're not in the woods, is just social engineering messages hitting us. So it's a chance to sort of like grassroots up, bring us together. I think it'll be cool to see how people coming together by going after the government and having a sense of purpose, feeling having responsibility, actually having the tools to be responsible for doing good things in their community. And like I said, this is like perfect for the local all the way up. I mean, and that's super important. Like you have to organize locally, and it's hard to do that without some sort of apparatus that keeps everyone aligned. Alignment is really important in a decentralized system. You want to have people aligned and to be able to make a case for that. And yeah, so, you know, it's like, I would like to see a trial run kick off. Someone's going to probably have to kick up some money. It's probably going to be from a campaign cycle. And then eventually, if we could get this built out before 2028, we can just start arming good politicians with this. And like I said, this is going to help us delineate who's a good politician or not based on how they feel about this. Like it's almost like a litmus test. It's a purity test, right? So to see if like if people are good or not. If we can get this before 2028, holy crap, that'd be crazy. But it could be rolled out probably in like, I don't know, 6 months with proper funding, probably like at least probably $1 million if you wanted to like take it to its full capacity. And you could probably seed it, you know, for much less than that, and you know, proof of concept it at a congressional level, up to a state level.
All right. Well, I really like it. I hope it does take off. And you know, if you need help reaching out to whomever, I don't know who you've approached with this program yet, but
well. Just a few people, you know, talking with you today is kind of how I wanted to share it. I like trying to impress a few people And if I can get them, then I feel more comfortable going to abroad. That way I'm not shooting my shot. And, but you know, this conversation is sort of you helping me, you know, break into the bigger conversation. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah. And like I said, I'd be happy to have you on my YouTube as well. A few more subscribers there. I mean, we're doing really good numbers actually for how small this channel is. We just started this Rumble account, to do this podcast, but yeah, no, I'm definitely
cool
behind it. What was your impression? You read through the paper, right, Peter?
Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, me being a more technically minded person, obviously I have a lot of thoughts on the actual platform, what the actual platform would look like, what the user experience would be for someone who's going to be completing one of those tasks. I see it as kind of like a list or database with a task manager and a bounty system. I would also like question things like, does it need to have a blockchain? Does it need to be decentralized? Could it be accomplished with like a centralized system hosting it? Maybe it needs a blockchain because you want it to be decentralized. But then if it's like a web platform that people log into to manage the tasks, that has to be centralized because you can't have like a blockchain. You know what I mean? You have to have like a server and et cetera. So if the user interface is going to be centralized, you might wonder, because blockchain has a bunch of added costs. And complexity, right? So these are all technical questions. So I would just, when I read it, I kind of get ahead of myself. Like, I agree with the general concept. I think it's a great idea to have a system that centrally manages. We've been thinking about how to include that in our Return to the Land website's backend and how to encourage and incentivize civic engagement among our members, tracking who's going to downtown meetings, who's running for office, mm-hmm. getting people to email public officials who are engaging in treason against their people, things like that. So it's nice because it's kind of right up our alley, and I think it's really great. I just think obviously the technical implementation is going to need a lot of thought. And
no, you could vibe code it
well
in a couple days, right?
In a lot more than a couple of days, but you could certainly vibe code it. The question is, you know, it's something that could end up being very, very complex. You would quite probably need a team of people as developers. So the question is, what do you start in a very simple way? Is it just going to do one type of thing and add all the other features later on? Yeah, I mean, the technical implementation is going to need some thought, but the concept is great.
Yeah, agree. Yep, it'll need a team. It's like I said, it's a interface topology. You know, tech minded. It's like, these are all the actual real problems that you know that will make it either work or not. And but I think the technology's there. Like, we have, I think, the full apparatus, and it's really about starting to poke at it so you can see what that interface is going to look like. And it's hard to pre-know all of that until you start actually building and actually seeing. And so you almost have to, like, trust the vision and then have some big brains, you know, working on it and feeling it out.
Yeah. Well, yeah, again, I'm all for it. If anyone's interested, how can they reach out and get involved?
Cool. So my X account is Archetype Theory. I'm running Operation Free Dalton right now. I'm helping kind of just figure out legal stuff, you know, post evidence, just kind of keep a clean narrative around that. And so that's kind of why, you know, that's kind of plastered everywhere. But my X account's probably the best. I also run the Elect Bilzerian fan account.
That's you. Okay, account. I didn't know that.
I also run that. Yeah, and that's actually its own thing. That's its own thing that does tie into the political memetic part of this as well. That's another conversation. But I'm also posting there as well.
Well, awesome. Yeah, reach out, people, if you want to get involved. And of course we do have our lawsuit, which will cost a lot of money. I know a lot of you people have already donated and we greatly appreciate it. If you can chip in maybe, you know, a monthly thing, a small amount every month, it's going to be going on for a while. So we do appreciate the support. Thanks everyone who super chatted. There's one last one on Rumble.
Hollow Eagleton says, maybe there's two, says keep up the good work. We will. Thank you. We have more super chats.
And White Hebrew Israelite, $5. Don't know what to say right now, but here, have my money. White power.
Yes.
All right. White power.
All right.
That's a good end. All right. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. See you next week.
Take care.